the train is on. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I don't know what the sing song. I'm Andrew Farmer. Nobody gets in to see the Cole. Nobody know how. Speaking of Cole, the Jedi Cole Houston is with me as always, producing this thing and co-hosting.
Good evening, primitives!
I don't know what's wrong with me. I've been staring at Alcon trivia for 4 hours. So, last week we started a new story arc last week. Cole, would you fill us in? Because it is your baby.
This is the superhuman condition, where we're talking about the psychology of being a superhero, of being a, you know, initially we talked about how do normal people who just have to like go out and buy things manage.
Just make stuff.
Yeah, and then choose to go out on patrol and fight crime. And then ultimately, oftentimes wind up fighting shoulder to shoulder with the big guns against the big guns.
Right.
And now we're moving into, this is Man Plus. This is our second chapter of 5. And this, we're gonna ramp it up now. We're not just talking utility belts. We're talking utility suits.
Right.
We're talking the big time augmentations for you. Without that augmentation, you're not going to be a very effective crime fighter. You probably wouldn't have gone into crime fighting absent that.
This is less crazy, okay? Like in the last issue, we talked about how crazy, like what level of psychosis do you have to be a Rorschach or a Batman or a, you know, without, I think the only example we could cite was Shang-Chi as being the one that wasn't out of his mind, you know, like everybody else is just literally out of their ever-loving gourd to go out and fight crime. This is different. These people, you know, these are your genius scientist, you know, or like you so brilliantly supposed at the end of the Avengers, which was prescient, I will add. Like as the movie ended and we were leaving the Avengers together, he's like, "Mark my words, what's going to happen now is people are going to start finding this alien tech and blah 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 blah. This is all going to happen. All of a sudden, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. based on finding alien tech."
That's right.
God,
the tech is lying around waiting for people to pick it up.
Do you have like the what was his name from Pee Wee Herman, the fortune teller? I can't remember. The
Jambi.
Do you have like Jambi juice? It's like Jamba juice, but completely different.
It's magic.
So yes, less crazy, more informed crime fighting is happening in this issue of Hey Kids Comics, I believe.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, where you're taking it a step further. Because, like, for example, Tony Stark becomes a crime fighter to, you know, go right for one of the more obvious. Because he has, you know, out of necessity, creates something that then he realizes, you know, I'm so damn smart, I can just keep making this over and over and over.
Right.
And over.
And over and over, yeah, about a thousand times over.
Yeah, and so I'll just keep adding stuff. And he's like that Dyson vacuum cleaner guy. Just can't leave well enough alone. Like, okay,
I
want to
see
how much.
Oh my god!
How much more vacuum do I really need?
I want to see that commercial. That Tony Stark Dyson with the weird Swedish guy. What if I told you that you could put repulsors in your fans to dry your hands? Like, I want to see that guy.
Repulsor technology removes 110% of all dirt matter. It actually differentiates between.
Yeah, no, absolutely. like, you know, you've got, but the opposite side is true too. So you got guys like Tony Stark, and you know, these guys that take their tech and take their augmentation to the next level and use it to right wrongs or fight crime or, you know,
or commit crime.
Yes. You get guys that now are you get your, you know, your big standouts, which are like your Flash's rogues gallery, which at some point the gimmick becomes more than the man, I think.
Oh, absolutely. The thing about Flash's rogues gallery is the one thing, the ultimate rogue is going to be the guy who figures out none of these guys are worth a damn without their tech. why not be weather mirror wizard cult guys? In other words, mimic all of their tech.
Exactly. What, just steal
and
one, it all.
Just, and steal from Tony Stark. Just to have a suit that has like a freeze ray and a weather control wand and a little antennae that control the weather, and you got mirror gimmicks, and you know, all of a sudden you put Flash through his paces. You got, you know, one hand's the heat gun, one hand's the
cold gun. Why didn't, you know, and I'm sure that I missed something where that happened, where somebody
had to have, like, you know, got boomerangs and top weapons, you know, weapons that act like tops.
You know, boomerang in my mind is kind of,
it's like the dreidel.
Boomerang's kind of the saddest in my mind. He's kind of the bridge between the last issue and this issue, except in the saddest way possible.
That's true. He's the height of boomerang throwing prowess.
And how is that a skill? When did somebody make that into a skill? Like I'm the best at throwing boomerangs. That was a Stu can call me out on my Australian accent there. Can you say what I just said in an actual Australian accent?
I'm the best at throwing boomerangs.
Thank you for that. But yeah, so how do you make the best at throwing boomerangs?
At that
boomerangs?
Point, you're like the shoveler. You know, I throw boomerangs. I throw boomerangs very well.
Right, I smell far.
Yeah.
I throw boomerangs. I'm the best at what I do, and what I do is very, very specific.
Let me tell you, historically, 97.9% of all my boomerangs I still have.
That's right.
I still have most of my original boomerangs. There's a few early on that got lost. There was that one where we were, like, doing skeet boomerangs at sea, and, you know, there were a couple that got lost. I'll give you that, but not many can throw that many boomerangs.
I got a little big for my britches. My ego got a little big, and I whipped a boomerang at Superman once. Didn't go well, but
he actually melted it before it got back to me.
The sad thing is, he let it come back, and then he melted it on the way back.
Yeah, like right when I was about to grab it, he melted the other end. You know how useless that is?
It was just the center of a
boomerang.
You think
when your alignment's off in your car, it's a little no. It was just, you know, boomerang's a precision instrument.
And Digger Harkness didn't come off as the strongest physicist, like mechanical physicist I've ever met in my life. How is he the guy making his own boomerangs to, like, the specifications needed to fly?
He probably started out, you know, as a kid having a passing interest. I think most kids do.
Boomerangs. I had a passing interest in lawn darts, but not boomerangs.
Unfortunately, the Flash villain, the Lawn Dart, only made one appearance and apparently died in action.
He got banned and pulled off the shelves around 1988.
But I think, you know, Digger probably started out working, you know, at a boomerang shop for the tourists and decided, you know, the boomerangs they were selling were lackluster. They were rather pedestrian designs. They were the sort of thing you'd hawk to tourists.
Yeah.
He knew he could do better. Maybe went and studied with some Aboriginal peoples and then took, you know, some drafting classes or something.
Some online drafting
classes. Yeah, and then they bought a router or a lathe or something and just started working. And
making it happen.
And obsessing over them until he found the perfect boomerangs. And then naturally, anyone who follows a pursuit to its ridiculous conclusion turns to crime.
Well, you immediately turn to crime. Yeah.
You have to.
Well, we talked about,
you spend all your damn money and all your damn time working on this stupid pursuit, and then no one will hire you because you haven't had a job in 16 months.
Right. The boomerang industry is very, very cutthroat.
Yeah. And you know, your name's Digger Harkness, and you dress like a stewardess.
You have a little fan. You're jaunty.
Yeah.
Your style only can be described as jaunty.
It's bad enough that he's Captain Boomerang, but why his fashion sense is to dress like a Pan Am stewardess? It's beyond me. I don't know. You pick it up.
His mother was a stewardess.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I mean, that's exactly what that looks like.
And you know,
it looks like the people that would be serving Indiana Jones drinks on his way to Marrakesh.
Well, he started his life of crime as the steward. And it didn't go very well. So he was in his room one day working on his steward's costume.
Yeah.
And he was looking around. And he was like, "This has to. There's a piece of this puzzle missing.
I got a whole shed full of boomerangs.
He's like, "There's a piece of this puzzle missing. What is it? A bandolier of precision made boomerangs. That's what it's missing." So
because what you have with Captain Boomerang is somebody like the Riddler who also has a weapon.
Right.
And so he's moving toward that. It didn't occur to him to make anything to augment his boomerang throwing or make big boomerang guns or anything.
Right.
Or the ill-fated boomerang plane. He's never got anywhere.
He would it would get about 10 miles out and come right back.
I know. Like, well, that was a short
trip. Also, the Dramamine you have to take to fly in the boomerang plane is...
The boomerang plane was not a good idea.
It was fail. Yeah, it was bad.
Then just out of courtesy, Superman melted it.
Just straight up was like, can you do this solid...
Let me help you out here. You don't need this.
He got a hold of Bizarro and boomerang plane is the best. And just melted it.
Could you show me how much you love boomerang plane?
Boomerang plane. if I realize we're only 10 minutes into this issue of Hey Kids Comics, if you don't walk away with anything else, walk away with boomerang plane because we will.
I imagine a lot of our listeners will be spending the next couple of weeks just imagining all of the iterations and writing their own stories in their minds about. The adventures of the boomerang appliance.
It's the Gandalf level Hawks for this year.
That's right.
Boomerang appliance is the Gandalf level Hawks of 2015.
And the nice thing about boomerang appliance is if you extrapolate that to the commercial size one, he's already got the stewardess outfit.
I can't stand. I equally love and can't stand boomerang appliance. Just saying boomerang appliance. Everybody stop what they're doing right now as they listen to this show and say out loud the word boomerang appliance.
Say it with me. Boomerang a plane.
And tell me you don't feel like the most ridiculous human being on the face of this earth.
And for those of you who are really brave of heart, run out of the room and just grasp your loved one by the shoulders and say, boomerang a plane. And then run off.
And then just run off. So let's talk a little bit, since we're talking about the Flash's rogues gallery as it is. How do they get their tech? I'm curious, because you got guys like Mirror Master, who obviously he made a mirror.
Yeah.
Everybody made their stuff somehow. Central City and Keystone City, the sister cities of the DC Universe, have the most brilliant geniuses and yet the most bumbling fools ever created in any world.
I think it was one of those, it's meant to be one of those cautionary tales of the inevitable old chestnut of if only you had used your immense mental capacity and your ability to invent and create for good.
But there are so many. How many times?
I know.
They should call it the dead horse. They should call their bar the dead horse bar because you're beating it so heavily.
Well, then everyone's forced to specialize. I guess that's why no one's ever come and just been the everyman, the every rogue, and just come in and put all of these things together into one.
Right.
Why did that not occur to anybody?
Well, here's the thing, right? You start with Captain Cold. He was sort of like the granddaddy. Invents a cold gun. His name is Snart. You got to do something with that. So you invent a cold gun, and you go out, and you start trying to, you break into bank vaults by freezing them and breaking them, and then the Flash comes and takes your gun. But you break into a few, right?
Yeah.
You break into a few vaults. So you get a little bit of a reputation. And then you get, guys like Mirror Master and Pied Piper start showing up. Like, okay, well, if Cold can do it, I got this mirror that I made in a prison workshop that allowed me to walk through dimensions, essentially. So I can walk in here. So a few more banks.
Let me tell you, that is some good mirror work.
Right? That's silver nitrate taken to the next level. If you build a mirror gadget that allows you to walk through dimensions. And the Pied Piper, who, plays his little fife and but even that being said, like okay, so you guys come and you guys get taken down, all right? Is the for any of these villains, okay, let alone the heroes. The heroes do it because, obviously, there's, you know, we went over this in the hero story arc. There's a sense of duty, you know, there's, you know, a sense of pride about it. Like, the villains do it for money. I mean, we pretty much decided that the driving force for villains was, for whatever reason, money was the driving force.
That tends to be the number one. Either that or you're just nuts. Nothing matters.
Does it make sense to keep... Is the money worth going to that well over and over
again? It's almost like a foregone conclusion. Like I was saying with Boomerang, I think you could extrapolate this across the entire Rogues Gallery, is they spent so much on their gimmick that their crime spree is just to put some money back in the bank and pay off that high-interest credit card debt. You know, to buy some sort of, you know, glass ain't cheap.
That's true. That's true.
And mirrored glass, you know, any type of whatever mirrors are made of.
That's silver nitrate glass. I mean, if you go to Home Goods and you buy a decent sized mirror, like that's you're not that's not chump change.
No. And you know, the thing about it is they put all this together so they could become super criminals, but ultimately they're just trying to pay off some debts.
Right.
And maybe get a little ahead. And, you know, at the end of the day, most of the con men types are always just like one step ahead of bankruptcy if, you know, they really cared about things like that. But, you know, they're almost always, you know, just on that break-even point.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's off to the next scam. And that's really what's going on with a lot of these guys, except they spent a ton of money to make sound-based weapons or weather-based weapons.
Right, you had to pay somebody to do it. Like, essentially, either you did it yourself, and you had to, you know...
Ham guns.
Boomerang of planes.
You
had to go out and go on Craigslist and find the parts you needed, you know, or...
Where are you going to find a condenser coil?
Or you had to pay somebody to build it for you.
Yeah. And I think that there was... Wasn't there, like, a Marvel Secret War miniseries, which was about, like, literally how a lot of the villains got outfitted, like Scorpion?
Yeah, no, yeah.
How do you go from being, like, a petty thief or a bank robber type... To, you know, I was just, like, dumpster diving one day. I found this Scorpion suit.
Right. Like
no, that's not how that works. Somebody had to give it to you and say, hey, if I give you this cool tech, I get, like, 70%.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's the other thing is that you're essentially in the DC universe, you're essentially, unless you have... You know, it's almost like a weird pyramid scheme, Headhunter, Amway type situation, where you've got guys like the Calculator out there who have a line on, you know, the Hope Diamond coming to Keystone City. So you need to get those jobs. There are people out there paying for those jobs. So you are basically mercenarying. So you're paying them a certain amount of your money to broker these deals. You're also paying to have this stuff made. You know, superheroes aren't the only ones with the guys like Forge and Rick Jones and Tucker Carlson and who else? No, Tucker Carlson is not. He's a pundit for he's a right wing pundit. But you've got, you know, like the villains have to have those guys too, right?
Absolutely. And then, you know, in case of a mishap, you've got your Dr. Moons out. I guess he was a psychiatrist, but you got your crime doctor.
Right, crime doctor.
Is there, you know, blatantly hanging his shingle out?
Right, just ripping people off left and right to take bullets out, or you know,
exactly. You know, you want to go where they're looking for you. You want to go to the crime doctor.
Crime doctor.
In fact, yeah, he's actually franchised now. You know, a lot of people think it's just the same guy, but no, it's a whole bunch of them. It's like. Those little minor emergency clinics, like Care Now.
Exactly. Why isn't there a comic book called Crime Doctor?
Yeah.
That's an episodic. It's not a high, you know, high adventure book, but it's an episodic book about these supervillains who have to come in, and the Crime Doctor has to.
Well, that, you know, what about the Crime Doctor's office? I mean, you got to keep some semblance of records. So you kind of know
right
where you took the last bullet out.
It would have to be like in a pocket universe somewhere.
And then you got, you know, you got a number of doctors on staff, so you've got, you know, some of your older crime doctors who are just sort of like, you know, with a cigarette hanging out of their mouth. They don't give a shit about anything. You got your young dynamic doctor who's trying to, like, get people to swear off going and committing crime because, you know, you're just one bullet hole away from...
Right.
There's not much of you left that hasn't been hit by some projectile.
Well, and so we've got the Flash on the other side of the aisle from the Flash. You've got Spider-Man, who has sort of the equal kind of level of villainy. Guys like the Beetle,
yeah,
who created his own, you know, kind of weird suit. Like, oh, Tony Stark's making this Iron Man suit. I'm going to make this suit based on the Beetle. Like, okay. So it's got wings, yeah, that fly.
I don't want to, you know, I can't think of a really cool name, but if I kind of, you know, reconfigure my flight mechanism to pop out from under a shell like the wings of a beetle.
Right.
And
nothing could go wrong with that. There's no...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the old adage is, you know, less movable, less moving parts is better. Did not. That was lost. That was lost on the beetle.
Well, then it seems like, you know, those who choose an invertebrate name also tend to go in greens. You know, the beetle, the scorpion.
Purple and greens, yeah. There's a lot of purple and green.
Bermuda Rank, very unsuccessful invertebrate-based villain.
the bull weevil. He was,
yeah.
But what's funny
is... He was
a
southern villain.
What's funny is...
Fought Texas Twister.
That would be great.
I want to see Texas Twister versus the Boll Weevil.
Is
Bobby,
is,
get to work on that.
But is that there's at least three iterations of the Beetle. All three iterations of the Beetle kind of kept with the same theme. Like, you know, the one before got locked up every second time he left his house. Literally, he didn't even have to be in the Beetle outfit. He just left his house and got locked up. You know what would be great?
Well, he had a lot of outstanding parking tickets. Right. The problem, there were always warrants out. So he's like going home to get suited up for a new job. And they're like, oh, there you are.
Oh, I see you there. And not to be outdone by
like
the DC.
Me or taking a little walk, a little stroll downtown.
He's the Irish cop now.
Irish cop.
Is he Sean Connery from The Untouchables?
That's right.
All right.
How did you know I was the Beetle? Who would claim to be that? Who was not?
Who would claim to be that? Bullets don't... This ship doesn't respond. This type of ship doesn't respond well to bullets. Sorry, that was Hunt for Red October. But still, his Russian accent was not... It was a straight-up Scottish accent.
Actually from the comic Hunt for Omega Red.
But not to be outdone on the other side of the aisle, Marvel also had a Boomerang, because Boomerang-centric villains were all the rage in the 60s.
That's right. Scarecrows and Boomerang.
Scarecrows and Boomerangs. That was the name of my favorite old ABC detective show.
I remember
the Scarecrow
that. That
and the Boomerang.
Great. Abe Vigoda was on that.
Abe Vigoda was on
it. Played their chief.
He did.
God, I want you two to quit messing around.
I want you two to quit messing. God damn it. Venus Flytrap always spin those records. It was great. But yeah, so this one, though, was a baseball player. So if you know how to throw a baseball, you know how to throw a boomerang. That's the rules. Yeah. And so he had his own specialized boomerangs as well. It strikes me you're right. There are two types of people, and you got your Tony Starks, and you got your superhero side. Not too many villains go this route. Lex Luthor being one that was extremely intelligent, made his own suit of, you know, the battle armor, I guess.
Cause the thing about it is he started out being above average.
Right.
Being in the first category.
Right.
Then he moved to the second category when he got his armor. And then that guy all got retconned and never happened. So, and then he got it back later. So I don't know what to think anymore.
He's one of those rare heroes that in some way, shape, or form kind of transcends all the issues of this story arc. A rare villain, I guess hero villain, whichever way you want to go. He's been everything.
Yeah.
But he's had, you know, no powers, a suit of armor, superpowers. He's been mutated. He's been biologically augmented. He's been a god. He's been, you know, he's been made dumb. He's just been everything. that's Luther's shtick, right? He's been through the ringer. Like, if anybody deserves to be a supervillain at this point, I think it's probably Luther. He's earned it. but, you know, you're either extremely intelligent, you're either a Tony Stark, a Henry Pym, a Reed Richards, a Lex Luthor, or you're the Chameleon, or, you know, Boomerang, or the Doc Ock. Okay, there's a good one.
Yeah, Doc Ock's a great example of someone who, you know, has taken their tech too far to the point where you don't know where Otto Octavius ends and the Doc Ock arms begin anymore.
Right, but you're either extremely... There's no middle ground. There's no Henry the Accountant finds a set of, mechanical angel wings and a sword that sets itself on fire and becomes the archangel and flies around fighting crime. You're either really, really kind of dumb and have an extreme inferiority complex, or you're really, really smart and don't have anything better to do with your time but apply that intelligence to making the world either a better or worse place.
Yeah, I mean, apart from someone actually, you know, imparting something to you.
Right.
A good example of that would be the Wrecker. Because I believe the Enchantress came and said, hey, criminal guy, how about if I gave you an enchanted pry bar?
Which is only the best thing ever.
That's like, okay, this, oddly enough, that goes way, way back. But it makes as much sense as the shoveler from the Mystery Men in the comics. The Mystery Men actually were characters that appeared in Flaming Carrot comics. And apparently the shoveler in the comics had an enchanted shovel. It was actually the singing shovel of King Arthur.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, apparently in addition to the singing sword, he had a singing shovel as well. And the thing is, this is farce and parody. Yet, for decades beforehand, here was the same thing with this
right.
Singing crowbar.
No, it's absolutely, you're absolutely correct. It's ridiculous.
It's from Crowbardenheim.
Crowbardenheim.
That's where the Asgardians keep all their, buy all their tools. It's like a big box store.
Right. It's from Home Deep and Guard.
Yeah. It's just this big sign that says Crowbardenheim.
And, you know, hold there, Himdo. We need to make a run to Home Deep and Guard.
There's like a bunch of little sheds out front.
It's like, you go in, there's just light fixtures on the left as far as the eye can see.
Like the whole gallery of ceiling fans.
Home Deep and Crowbardenheim is a part of
apartment within the home.
I don't know. I think Home Deep and Guard might be the inside of Crowbardenheim. Like, you've got it. It's like the 12th world. They don't even bother putting it on there.
It really, it's not worth talking.
It's
about.
An exit on the way to Midgard. It's just that's.
Occasions where somebody gets to be man plus by virtue of somebody just sort of handing something over to them.
Well, like, consider the Black Knight is the same way.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't just handed, you know, the ebon sword that can cut through anything. He was also handed a Pegasus. Come on. Like,
what else does Santa have in his
bag? That's right.
Jeez.
Thor might have a chariot pulled by goats.
Our smarts and our riches, but no, you just get it all handed over to you, little bastard.
But so my other question is: we've talked a lot about tech people. I mean, Iron Man goes without saying. We've talked about Iron Man until we're blue in the face, which blue in the face is another Spider-Man villain that we won't get into. What about genetically augmented people?
That one we're actually going to get into in the next one. This is where this is more the do-it-yourself.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about in our next installment is we're going to get into either by accident or design augmentation.
But what about temporary augmentation?
Oh, that's a good point.
Like
Venom. Bane.
Yeah, like Bane, who uses the Venom, or Venom himself, who is augmented solely
by... Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, we'll go with that then.
by the, that's what I was thinking, like you've got guys like Bane, who are, you know, fairly wimpy little dudes, but once they pump up, they can apparently,
yeah, it turns into like Nike shoe there.
Apparently can break Batman's back.
Yeah.
So there's guys like that out there too, that, for better or worse, have been kind of, you know, fed a cocktail of a weird super soldier serum to make them into, you know, giant hulking things. That's the thing about this issue that strikes me as weird. These people, you go out with the in the first issue, you go out with a clear knowledge of what you're doing. You're crazy enough to go out with no powers whatsoever, with a can of hairspray and a Zippo to fight crime, Rorschach, right. You crazy bastard. You know, but you know you're doing it. You're set. You're focused. You're psychotic about it. This one, it's almost like they don't know any better. It's like, oh, here's a drug that makes you super strong and can break Batman. Go do your thing.
Yeah, like, I'll take it.
Like, here's a suit with a weird cybernetic scorpion's tail attached to it.
You know, for example, like, speaking to that augmentation, which is one of the things that hadn't occurred to me in developing this arc, is Hourman, for example.
Yes.
He is a pharmaceutical mogul who takes it upon himself to create a, albeit very small, very low half-life,
yes,
augmenting drug that he markets solely to himself. But then again, FDA approval for superhero drugs is brutal. You wouldn't believe what they went through with that super soldier serum. Just to get it to the testing phases.
Right, right.
And I want to see, you know, they did the comic, what was the comic where they had the, you know, much like so many things in this country, in our history, especially around the war, where you had there was actually like a retconned precursor to Captain America.
Right, right, yes.
And I cannot remember the name of the...
I can't remember the name of the... It was like Uncle. Well, it wasn't Uncle Sam, but it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, you basically were. You know, you had the black guy who was given the super soldier serum before Steve Rogers was.
Right.
And then nobody ever talked about that or something. I never got a chance to follow that book. But that was essentially the concept. Is there was even a more secret super soldier project.
Exactly.
It was like, you know, just in case this doesn't work, because we don't care back then. And I want to see a book, you know, that we've had the super, like the Pet Avengers. I want to see a book about all the guinea pigs, mice, and other, you know, the super rodents and super pigs and things from the clinical trials.
Right, you've got
the experimental phase. You got like all these, you know, like two or three of them had to have gotten out.
And
got into the breeding populations out in the wild.
Well, I'll tell you, the Hourman formula, the first generation Hourman formula, was not that successful because Minuteman was rough. You got superpowers, but they only last a minute. Do something with it. You only got a minute. Go.
Yeah. So yeah, you really you kind of want to be like if you're at the bank and you hear the alarm go off, then you pause, and just as the crooks are running out, then you pop it.
Right, right.
Slobber them to a man.
And then you get back on your boomerang plane and fly
out
of
there. That's right. No, off you go. And you vomit because some stomach upset may be a side effect.
But here's
another augmentation that we haven't really thought about, and that's magic.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's one that, by its very definition, has to define you. You cannot, you know, Stephen Strange is not going to go toe-to-toe with Dormammu as a doctor.
Right, right.
Maybe I could prescribe you an antidepressant, which it turned out was all Dormammu ever needed. The flames dissipated. He was just... Really,
it was sad, really.
Super, you know, he was bipolar.
He had issues. He just wanted to talk a little bit. You know,
yeah.
They got it all worked out.
He's done very well since then.
But yeah, you've got especially one to really consider is Dr. Fate, because Dr. Fate wouldn't exist without the Dr. Fate helmet.
Yeah.
So that is a full magical augmentation.
Yeah, and the fact that it can be used by anybody, that the helmet chooses, and in many ways the same with the Green Lantern ring.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, it goes flying around. Irwin M. Fletcher, you choose, and then all of a sudden you're Green Lantern if you're worthy.
Right.
And to some degree, the Hammer of Thor, if Thor himself is not involved.
There are a lot of items, and we had that issue on items, but there are a lot of items that choose to augment versus, you know, not vice versa.
Yeah, they you can't just go and, like, be handed the crowbar of Crotenheim. This is where the Crotenheim crowbar picks you.
Yeah, which is really...
It's like a sorting hat.
Oh. Have we made it 124 issues
without
talking about Harry Potter, and now we've talked about Harry Potter. All right, that's fine. We'll let it stand.
I think you actually won. I had said 110, and you had said 122.
I think, yes. I think
so you actually are closer to the actual retail price without going over, so you win the showcase.
There needs to be a Price is Right for these supervillains. That's what I want to see. or a Family Feud.
Yes.
I want to see, like, Spider-Man's villains versus the Fantastic Four, the Frightful Four versus the Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery on the Family Feud. But no, like, that's a really interesting point, because when we assume that somebody is augmented, we assume that they went out and bought a suit or made a gun or, you know, whatever might have happened to them to so that they could augment themselves.
Somehow came by something that gives them that edge, that advantage, you know, and defines them as a hero or villain or what have you.
But what we don't consider is the Dungeons & Dragons intelligent item that, you know, that called you to it to make you, like, I don't know why it never occurred to me, but the Doctor Strange helmet, you're absolutely right. That's something that... Or Dr. Fate helmet, Dr. Strange Fate, if you're in the Amalgam universe. Essentially, if you put it on and you can't handle it, it melts your brain.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. Just forget it. You're done, son. You're done. So,
and that's true of a lot of the mystical items. You know, they can give you great power if you happen to have the intestinal fortitude to survive them, like the Medusa mask, which will inevitably drive you mad.
Right.
But... which, you know, gives you that ironic name of Psycho Man, because, you know, you have the ability to control or impart psychosis, but you're also naturally going to become psychotic yourself.
Right. but there, you know, we're not talking about Etrigan, the demon here. We're not talking about, you know, in my mind, like, Zatanna falls into the next category. She has as much magic as her. It's, you know...
Yeah, and with Etrigan, very often, you know, just because you're the host, you're no more augmented by him than, you know, by having a tick or something.
Right, or Damon Hellstrom, son of Satan, is definitely not in this. He's a, you know...
We move forward into the next category or two.
With those guys, right.
Those guys, yeah.
But your Doctor Strange is your...
Shaman from...
Exactly.
Which I wanted to point out, you know, we often Americanize this because the bulk of the heroes are American characters.
Right.
And we did not mention in the last issue one of the more impressive, ordinary yet by his very nature extraordinary.
Oh, damn, we missed him.
Yeah, we did not mention Puck.
I feel bad now.
Yeah,
I feel bad.
He overcame physical challenges and is like one tough little customer who gets to go out with the big guys, with a whole team of big guys, and fight often ludicrous villains that John Byrne's wife suggested.
I think John Byrne is the craziest regular guy that we could talk about. God damn it, John Byrne.
But moving into this category, you've got characters like Shaman, you've got Box, who is one of the more interesting characters that Byrne ever created.
Absolutely.
Because you have this armor, but you're augmenting beyond, you know, it's not some physically fit Brainiac, it's tubby Brainiac with no legs.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. That's you know, in the guy who created the box, Though I think he was a mutant, wasn't he? Jeffries or Jeffers or what was his name?
Oh, was he a mutant?
The guy who actually created it. But, you know, and there's one here that there's an elephant in the room that I've kind of been waiting on talking about. So I want to know.
Actually, I believe that in this case, his name was Roger Box.
Okay, so different guy. Okay.
Figure. Yeah, the original, I think you may be onto something there. But yeah, the original Box was just a Brainiac guy, but he and James Hudson, McNeil Hudson, later Vindicator.
Who's another off-minute guy.
Yeah,
had another a super suit.
In fact, Alpha Flight's a great example that carries through almost every aspect of this arc. I think it comes just shy of the fifth element, or the fifth issue. But it's going to hit. You could use that as an example, because you've got somebody who fits into the first chapter. You've got three or four characters that fit into the second.
Right.
And as we move into the third and even the fourth, there are characters that fit those criteria.
Yeah. Well, I mean, John Byrne, for all that we give John Byrne hell for, which is a lot, he was a genius at... He was almost... I don't put him on the same level as, let's say, Alan Moore for taking things from angles that you would never think of them and then applying that to comic books.
Yeah.
But he is definitely in the upper echelon of that. If you go back and read a lot of the old Alpha Flight, because he's very... Where Alan Moore isn't, John Byrne is very ham-fisted with a lot of his storytelling, I think. But I like that. But it's not as subtle as some of the crazy... You know, Alan Moore's got two modes. He's either just straight up in your face, or he's very, very subtle, and he can play both very well off of each other. Whereas John Byrne has a full stop in between the two. But, you know, he definitely will approach things, his storytelling and his stuff with the X-Men and his stuff with Alpha Flight, he's very good at sort of weaving those things together. There's an elephant in the room that as we're approaching the last, you know, 15 or so minutes of this, I want to discuss with you and see where you stand, because I know where I stand, okay? And that is a DC character who is almost fully augmented. Started out as a teen football star, was in a horrible accident at Star Labs, and is now fully augmented and a major player in the DC universe, and that would be Cyborg.
Yes.
I don't know where you stand, because it almost pushes the boundaries of this, because he's almost gone so far that he crosses over, but he's definitely a cybernetically augmented character.
You know, in fact, cybernetics was one of the things I wanted to bring into the mix here.
Okay.
That would occasionally cross my mind as we were discussing all this, and a lot of that is an augmentation, oftentimes foisted on you, certainly in Cyborg's case. Because his dad couldn't stand the thought of his son being blowed up. So
he took a brain and a lung and stuck it in a suit.
Yeah, the brain, whatever bits of flesh weren't completely destroyed. They didn't go full RoboCop. I mean, they...
I love the fact that full RoboCop is a thing. They didn't go full RoboCop.
Well, you know, you have to... You, when you think of the phrase full RoboCop, which didn't exist until just now, but then you immediately invoke images of Miguel Ferrer saying, lose the arm.
Right, right.
So, you know, at least he got to keep his shoulders and his upper arms and his lower leg, his upper legs, his perhaps his naughty bits. It was never adequately explored.
It wasn't. And I hope
they
really
get to
that.
But he did have a girlfriend, so I always imagined he probably did have some particularly naughty bits.
I hope that they really get into the exploration of that in some of these next story arcs. And
well, especially if, you know, young women are growing up and just being aghast that Starfire has a libido.
Well, they're putting that Teen Titans show on TBS. So I'm really hoping that, you know, maybe they'll CW it up a little bit, and we'll get a love story, a weirdo love story.
Weirdo love story. But yeah, the thing about it is that, you know, sometimes you choose to be augmented in that way, you know, but you get your cyborgs like Cyborg, or a really curious case of cybernetics gone strangely wrong, Deathlock.
Oh, yeah, the cyborg zombie, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is interesting on a whole lot of different levels. Like,
Deathlock is literally Cyborg if Vic Stone's dad wasn't as good as he was. Vic Stone shouldn't complain. If he ever hung around the Marvel Universe any length of time and got to meet Deathlok, you'd think, like, you know, Dad, you did all right.
Cybernetics 3, three minutes later, that's Deathlok. If Vic would have shown up 3 minutes later.
They'd have hauled that carcass of, you know, half Vic Stone, half Libby's corned beef hash into the lab.
Oh, man. Hormel potted meat. God.
It's like somebody ran over a Vienna sausage, a can of Vienna sausages with a truck. Just
somebody nasty. Took to that beef jerky with a weed whacker. God.
It's just all over the prairie there. But, you know, and then you got characters like, I'm not familiar enough. Is Cable a mutant, or is he just a cyborg? He's a cyborg mutant.
That brings me to a thing that I wanted as we approach the crossing over mark, the stairway to heaven that is the Michael Landon that is the in-between show. What is it with taking already superpowered characters and then augmenting them further? Because Cable is a mutant that is cybernetically augmented. So is Forge. So is Wolverine. So is Deadpool. So is Omega Red. So is there's so many that have been.
Yeah, because you've got a case like, okay, with Constrictor, for example.
Okay, yes, good.
And Omega Red both have the same inexplicable long mechanical earthworm whip things going on.
Weird anime porn whips, arm tentacles.
But one of them, has to have a suit to do it, and the other one was already a mutant.
But he still needs a suit to do it. That's the thing.
It's like, well, what else could we do? You know, because I'm not even sure what Omega Red's powers were, but
he sucked the life force out of people, but...
Oh, okay. But I guess they figured he needed, the Boba Fett, spring action rope.
Right.
So that then he could, draw in his victims closer.
Right, like I guess the hands weren't enough. Yeah. You needed these weird metal tentacles that popped out to do it,
If somebody's at a distance, you can draw them in. Because again, it's like Minuteman. You know, you don't. He's got to close that gap.
You got to do it fast. Minuteman. That's the best. The best super. Oh wait, there's one I wanted to talk about that we haven't talked about yet.
Oh.
One that I had completely forgot that I wanted to talk about, and that is Dial H for Hero.
Ah, very good. Which Dial H for Hero look at the other side of the fence there. I would be like, and this is one where it kind of crosses a line in a sense because, what was it? Captain Universe.
Oh, yes.
The hero that could be you. So many characters that would go on to become moderately iconic, you know, like maybe about a M or N list heroes, The Captain Universe first appeared in the Micronauts.
Really?
In much the same way Machine Man first appeared in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Didn't Rom appear in...
In Rom, actually.
Did Rom appear in Rom? Because I thought Rom was somewhere else. No, I guess not. He was a toy first, so that doesn't
count. Yeah. No, that's,
a whole different kind of
augmentation. He was cybernetically enhanced as well.
He was a space knight. I mean, yeah, that's got to count for something, right?
But he was like Vic Stone with a choice.
And a weird little square box ray gun.
It was more like Inframan, you know, where you you make the decision to sacrifice yourself to science.
Would the Heralds of Galactus fall into that category?
Yes, they would.
Because they're making the choice to augment themselves.
But then again, that may fall into where we're headed with the next issue.
There's so many gray areas.
Yeah.
So many. But
especially the cybernetic, mutants that are cybernetically enhanced does offer that great transition between Man Plus and the upcoming Above and Beyond.
Right.
Because if you're a mutant, that's what we're going to be talking about next time.
But right. But Dial H for Hero, what was yes. it mystical? It was mystical, right? The dial.
It almost have to be because it was just so damned random. I mean, you know, like one guy would get to be a Superman, the next guy would get to be like D-Man.
Right. It would randomly give you a power based on what you dialed up. Like it, which is
the thing
worst
is there was
augmentation.
No instruction manual. That
exactly.
Lost from like day one, the first guy that had it. Right out of the box. And then they get in some sort of weird twilight zone, you know, somebody gets tired of it, they pass on, here, you want this thing?
I don't know what it does.
It just
keeps giving me dick wings. I don't know what this thing
I didn't know such a thing was possible.
But. It's like Namor for my dick. I don't know what that is.
Serves no purpose for
none. It doesn't fly.
Less valuable than Minuteman.
I mean, you could get off the ground like a couple inches, but it's painful.
Well,
really,
it depends on your dick.
It's painful. It just drags you up by your wang. Nobody
be close to a foot.
Nobody. That's a whole different kind of augmentation.
Yes, indeed.
Oh my God! All right, well. Do you have any final thoughts on this before we press on into I go work on my cyber suit?
Yeah, I got a lot of tinkering to do on my special augmented giant flying fox bat suit with the cybernetic wings. And
I just really hope I don't dial up dick wings again. Old dick wings.
Old dick wings is back.
Old dick wings is back.
I think the main thing is that you have that strikes me as probably a 20 or 30 characters that I had in mind that escape me at the moment.
Right, because they all do.
Yeah, they're gone. But you know what this is serving, and as we talked about the cybernetically enhanced mutants and such, is each of these were building on the idea of. And I think we got in so much into the tech and everything, we didn't really talk about the psychology, but in a way, that tech has its own built-in psychology.
Right.
Across the board. Universally, the tech or the magic or whatever, you have that. It's empowering. You know, if you can conjure up the wall of invulnerability, or you've got the suit of armor that makes you relatively, you know, invulnerable and impervious,
right?
Then that takes you outside of that first realm,
right?
And it literally—it's almost like a bridging of the gap between your Batman's and your Wolverine's a bad example because he's like a double—he's double dipping.
He is, yes.
But you know, it takes you from your the difference between a Batman and a Superman. Because these augmentations allow a Batman to be a Superman.
Right.
Where Superman, you know, his prep to be Superman is waking up in the morning.
Right.
He puts on his suit. Batman has to put on like 17 layers of stuff and
sit in front of a computer.
Figure out what bat dash whatever thing he wants to take with him that day on the off chance that there's like giant clams or. Does he need his long underwear? maybe not. You know, you need to make some informed decisions every morning before you walk out the door, and you got to make sure the Batmobile's fueled up. And Superman just wakes up in the morning. Tony Stark gets up in the morning, and his entire suit is put on for him by mechanical robot arms that have taken good American jobs away from the people.
Gladly put on Iron Man's armor for him.
That's right, for a very cheap price. And so, you know, we're moving through a progression that literally stops cold at the next level, because then we start to go into realms beyond human. And the psychology changes. But, you know, we like I said, we talked a lot about the augmentations themselves, but not about the mentality thereof.
Right.
And I think we fell into that trap because, like these augmentations themselves, when you can create a means by which to make yourself above and beyond normal,
right.
A step or two or ten above everyone else, then that's the least of your worries. You go out and fight crime or you commit crime.
Right, because there's always another suit. There's always another gun. There's always
You're giving yourself the edge, be it a whipping tail or a weird grabby arm thing.
Or the kite or the stilt man.
Yeah, or a piece of hardware that's been augmented by magic.
I mean, even Vic Stone, for all of his cybernetic enhancements, has to... I mean, there's a panel in virtually every cyborg-centric comic where he's, like, disassembled in some weird lab bath of, you know, whatever neutrino fluid and rubbing alcohol they have him in, like, all taken apart. You know, there's still some prep there. You know, the difference, like you said, the difference between, you know, and what's really interesting about that is the difference between stage one and stage two is that stage one doesn't care. Like the Batman stage, there's two levels. There's either over-preparation or no preparation at all. It just doesn't matter. You just, you know, you're Shang-Chi, you're always ready. You wake up and you can put a foot in somebody's face and you don't care.
Exactly. You're walking down the street, you reflexively tilt to one side because there's something in muscle memory and in your own memory that you just, that inaudible horror of a ninja star flying at you that only you could recognize. You know.
Right.
Or, but like with Batman, you know, if he has his long underwear or he doesn't have his long underwear, he's either ready to roll or he'll adapt.
Right.
But, you know, if Tony gets out with missing one boot, it's going to be a hell of a dangerous flight.
Right. If you don't oil up the, you know, the Batarang plane, you're going to have a bad day. So, you know, it better be worth it to you is all I'm saying.
And I will make one final note on the point of psychology, because you were talking about Cyborg and the being, you know, disassembled at time, more often than not. But early into the development of the character, there was an interesting bit of psychology there. Is, you know, he is Man Plus, but he was afraid he was losing the man to the plus.
Right.
And there was always this struggle to prove that there was still something he could do.
Right.
That the human parts of him still mattered. And to the point where he was constantly challenging going beyond the specifications of the tech just to prove that he could augment the human side. And then literally the human side could benefit the tech side just as the tech side was benefiting the human.
And we see that in a lot of smaller ways. I think in every one of these kind of augmented or tech-based heroes, you know, When you rely so much on your technology, Tony Stark included, at what point do you lose man to machine or man to magic?
Or, exactly.
You know, at what point does Dr. Fate take over? Or, you know, does Dr. Strange overtake Stephen Strange? You know, I think that's
a very
relevant
argument. When's
the last
time Stephen Strange got to go out and do anything? Like, see a movie or something?
Yeah, when's the last time he bought a baguette and a nice bottle of red somewhere?
That's right, dude. No, he's got to go back and, you know, confer with the spirits or something.
With his green, he's got to cater a green Minotaur dinner with Wong and Renta.
You know, go and
my favorite
conjure the vapors again.
Conjure the vapors. I think that's the best way I think anybody's referred to Stephen Strange getting high.
Conjure the vapors.
Wong answers the door, and it's the Thing standing there. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Stephen Strange can't be bothered right now. He's conjuring the vapors."
Oh, you mean he's rocking the gun?
Oh, back when I was running with the Yancey Street Boys.
Oh, yeah, I tell you.
Angelo shows up. Oh, Angelo. Speaking of augmented.
Oh, yeah, what are you doing in there? All right.
He hangs out in Crowbardenheim with at
that's right
at Home Deep Guard. He's the main cashier. Angelo is
exactly.
He's front of house manager. All right. Well, why don't we wrap this up? That's a good hour. That was a really good. I'm happy with that. So why don't you plug us up there?
Conjure the vapors.
So we can conjure the vapors some more. So I can get on the Bat-Rang-a-plane. The Bat-Rang-a-plane now. It's not even just the Boomerang-a-plane, even though that's better. And conjure the vapors.
So, yeah, I think one final thing unrelated to all of this is if you're a comic fan like we are,
okay,
you are almost certainly, if you know what's good for you, watching Gotham.
Right.
Because you damn sure better be. And I had to share an observation with Andy before the show.
Right.
That I think warrants being shared universally. And that is that Harvey Bullock and James Gordon have a really frighteningly skewed kill-to-collar ratio.
They do. They do.
When it comes to perps. Because they have put more criminals in the ground than they have put in a cell. So, you know, let that mull around in your thoughts a while the next time you're watching Gotham. You'll see what I'm on about. And with that, this is, of course, coming to you through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can look for our tweets, which have become a little more frequent at intervals.
Yeah, they have.
It's at the Jedi Cole U. There's the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube channel that we're working on trying to get some more material up. That's going to continue to grow as we move toward doing some unique stuff there. There's bound to be something else. You can find the Jedi Cole Universe, Hey Kids Comics, the Rancor Pit Live, and a few other aspects of the JCU on Facebook. If you look around, as well as Convention Awareness Project Texas, at www.cap-tx.info, and my fevered, the vapors have overtaken.
The vapors have really overtaken you. One other thing that when we were doing the research for the show, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, and that was during the research, we were looking for, you know, all the augmented things and all the ways we could augment, and we stumbled upon an old favorite that deserves to be rementioned, and that is the Brooklyn Superhero Supply Company, which is superherosupplies.com. In which you can buy everything from invisibility capes to what were some of our favorites here?
Oh, there were some
chaos.
Of the best ones were, yeah, you can buy like cans or jars or bottles of things like chaos or invisibility, or
anti-gravity, the sea anemone sword.
You can buy matter or antimatter.
Right.
Like a half gallon of matter for $9.50.
So if you're looking to get into the augmented superhero or supervillain game, superherosupplies.com might be
a place. They've got everything you need. Because, interesting enough, matter comes in a half gallon jug, but antimatter comes in a paint can.
Well, you don't need as much.
Yeah. You can buy immortality by the gallon.
Which I think it takes, what, like 5 gallons to really make sure that you solidify your immortality?
That's so true.
You don't want to mess around with that. You want to lock it down. You want to overkill.
You want to consult your doctor to find out what the best dose would be for you.
And if you can find Crime Doctor, he's the best one to consult.
And of course, they do actually have a section on robotics, cybernetics, and mutations.
So if you're looking to mutate yourself, you got a place to go. All right, Cole, why don't you say goodnight?
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Join us next week when we talk a little more about mutants.
Mutants and the mutated
mutants. All right, good night, everybody.